Meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division will come to order. We are still waiting for a quorum, but I want to get going because we do have an eagle here. And since the first testifier is not here, we're going to substitute Representative Sundin's bill if he is prompt and quick with his testifiers. So, Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing House File 3605. I'd like to move the bill to get it before the committee.
Representative Sundin moves House File 3605 to be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. And we can't take action on your amendment yet, quite yet, but why don't you describe the bill and the amendment?
The state has a statutory obligation to assist with and provide for mitigation of wetlands that meet both state and federal requirements for local road repair and improvement projects. The local road wetland replacement program provides funding necessary to meet this obligation. Unfortunately, the funding has not been adequate, and the program is quickly running out of credits to operate. With that in mind, there is some urgency to get a cash infusion to keep road projects going and people working to address safety improvements. I have Rick West from Otter Tail County that is right behind me, and he would love to chime in on the issue.
Mr. West.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members.
If you could get closer to the microphone.
Is that better?
That's better. Yeah.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Rick West. I'm the Public Works Director for Otter Tail County, and thank you for the opportunity this afternoon. Otter Tail County is a county that has over 1,000 lakes and thousands of wetlands, and as it relates to our highway program, the local road wetland replacement program is crucial. The history of the program, I've been in Otter Tail County since 1990. And prior to that, this program, we were mitigating on project specific where we were widening wetlands along the project using local tax dollars to pay for the additional right-of-way we purchased from landowners for the wetland replacement requirements. And quite honestly, we're not creating quality wetlands through that process. In 1996, this program came into being through the state of Minnesota. And I would state to the committee, it's a program that I think is efficient and effective, and with the wetlands that are being restored that mitigate the impacts caused by road projects, it's a quality program. We are at the point with the program as it relates to Otter Tail County. We have several projects that we're working on right now. They will require credits from the wetland bank. And in our service area, which is service area 4, the credits available at this time are 0. So we've got a couple choices that we'll have to make. We will probably end up possibly going out to the private market to purchase, which they're much more expensive. And it's a program, again, that we feel has been effective and efficient and is meeting the word of the Conservation Act. So with that, Mr. Chair, we're in full support of this proposed legislation and would urge its approval for the funding of it so we can continue to utilize the program as local governments. This is not only for counties, but also townships and cities also use this program. So I will conclude with that and stand for any questions the committee may have.
Any questions? I would note that a quorum is present. Representative Sundin, do you want to move your bill and the amendment?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I would move House File 3605.
So Representative Sundin moves that House File 3605 be laid over for possible inclusion. You do have the A1 amendment, or do you want to move the A1 amendment?
I would like to move the A1 amendment to 3605.
Representative Sundin moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape he would like. Are there any questions to the amendment? Any questions to the amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Amendment is adopted. To the bill as amended.
I think you've just got a nice historical recap of what this program does and why it does it. We can pass all the laws we want about road construction in the state of Minnesota, but this is a necessary package. This is an affordable way to operate the program, and I ask for your support.
And I believe you have a couple other testifiers behind you. Mr. Larson?
We have testifiers available. Yes.
Mr. Chair, members, Dan Larson represented Minnesota rural counties today, 34 counties in greater Minnesota. We're the only organization that advocates specifically for rural county concerns. I'm going to be a little more circumspect in this. You've had a little more detailed testimony on the technicalities and practicality of the program. I think Mr. Mossman will get a little bit deeper into that, but I want to give a little history on this program. Our organization really started on this issue, the Wetland Conservation Act of 1996. And as I look around the table, I see one member at least that was here and prominent in those days. So the last piece and recognizing the three-tiered Wetland Conservation Act that came out of that process, that difficult two-year process, has worked well and has become a national model. One thing that has not worked well is funding wetland banking credits. And that was the last issue that held the board open for several days as counties and the state negotiated back and forth on who was going to pay the freight on wetland impacts going forward. This is a state mandate. It rightfully belongs on the state side of the ledger. We've had trouble, chronic trouble, over the years getting that program funded, and that's why we're in the situation we are in today. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Mossman.
Mr. Chair and members, Matt Mossman, the Minnesota Intercounty Association, thank you to Representative Sundin for carrying this. I think he summed it up best, really. These projects can't go forward without the wetland replacement program being available when the projects impact them. And, you know, what I would just really leave you with is that in the end of the day, the funding that has been going into this program over the last decade or so from a bond appropriation standpoint cannot be a fallback position anymore. That is what has gotten us into the problem that we are in, which is what's precipitating this cash request. So we really need the support of all of you as the bonding bill goes forward to both make sure that the program is fully funded from a bonding standpoint. This impacts every jurisdiction, every county, township in the state that builds roads, so in all of your areas. So we both advocate for the appropriation bonding level of $26.4 million. And then also this $10 million, which is also urgently needed and unfortunately needed, but nonetheless is the case in order to make sure these projects do not get delayed and can go forward during the time that it takes the Board of Water and Soil Resources to construct new wetlands. So we appreciate your support.
Any questions for the testifiers? Any questions at all? Representative Sundin, any closing comments?
Certainly, thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a handout you should have that delineates the 767 bridges that are in need of attention throughout the state, and we need to address this as soon as possible. This is an important program to keep road safety projects moving and continue the state's commitment to address related wetland mitigation. I ask for your support. I renew my motion that House File 3605 be adopted.
Sundin, I didn't ask if there was anybody else who wanted to testify. Is there anybody else who wanted to testify? The bill is laid over. Oh, well, no, not on. So thank you, Representative Sundin. Representative Akam. I will move that House File 2946 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Representative Akam, to your bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Hansen and members. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here today to hear or to present House File 2946. This bill allocates funds from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund to the University of Minnesota Raptor Center to work cooperatively with the DNR to provide outreach and workshops on alternatives to lead ammunition for hunting. There are a few things more symbolic of our country than the bald eagle, and in Minnesota, we are proud to be home of the largest population of breeding pairs. And yet, each year, many eagles are brought to the Raptor Center suffering from unintentional lead poisoning caused by scavenging gut piles and remains of deer taken with lead bullets. Hunters are true conservationists and a driving force behind many of our nation's conservation efforts. In 1986, we banned lead ammunition for waterfowl hunting because of the impact on bald eagles. Unfortunately, that change was not enough to protect our eagles, and we need to look further. As most of you know, the Raptor Center is located at the University of Minnesota on the St. Paul campus, and its mission is to ensure the health of raptors by providing medical care and rehabilitation. I'm joined today by the Executive Director, Julia Ponder, and she's going to tell us a little bit more about the situation.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen, members of the committee.
To go real close to.
Yeah, okay, maybe. Okay, thank you for the invitation to speak here today. My name is Julie Ponder. I'm a conservation or wildlife veterinarian with a background and expertise in raptors, environmental contaminants such as lead and pesticides. I also have a degree in public health. Lead is toxic. We've known that not just for decades, but for thousands of years. And yet we routinely harvest a food source with this toxic substance. It's well documented that the spent lead ammunition from deer hunting causes needless suffering and death in eagles. And it has also been shown to be present in venison packaged for human consumption. Our health system recognizes that there is no safe level of lead in children. Lead impacts the neurological system, causing learning disabilities and impaired development. Since the 70s, we have worked very hard to get most sources of lead out of human exposure. Over those same years, the Raptor Center has documented the problem of lead toxicity in bald eagles. The gut piles left behind in deer hunting are a free and toxic meal to many wildlife species, and especially to eagles. The problem has been consistent for many years. As long as I've known it. It's prevalent in adult eagles, the breeding population. I know one of the concerns is that there, or one of the suggestions that there's no lead impact on the population. I can tell you from a wildlife management point of view that if you take out your best and your strongest adult breeders, that's not a great wildlife management strategy. So of the eagles that come into the Raptor Center, 85 to 90% of them have lead exposure. 25 to 30% of them each year die from severe lead toxicity. Lead impairs the neurological system. It impairs the brain. It causes permanent and severe damage. Even though if we only lose 30 eagles a year, 30 adult eagles a year at the Raptor Center, this is just the tip of the iceberg. We have not done eagle populations nesting survey since 2005, but at that point, it was estimated that there were 1,300 breeding pairs or nests in Minnesota. Last year alone, 181,000 deer were harvested, and most of those had gut piles left behind. The number is not in eagles' favor. Our goal is to promote voluntary change from lead-based ammunition to non-lead ammunition for hunters' use. This is not anti-hunting. We have been doing grassroots education with the hunting community for almost a decade now. We find that they are unaware of the health risks to humans and wildlife from lead ammunition, and they're very receptive to this information. This bill would provide support for experiential workshops led by hunters, for hunters, brought two hunters around the state. The workshops would help the hunters to experience the different characteristics of different types of ammunition, as well as to see the disintegration of lead and how it permeates through the carcass. These workshops would be, these workshops have already been piloted and been shown to compel behavior change. We would also produce education and tools for youth firearms training and hunter training. We appreciate your support for this bill, and I'm happy to take questions, and I'm also happy to welcome our visitor, which is really the only reason you want me here.
No, we like you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Any questions for Dr. Ponder?
While we're getting the bird out, these are gut pile pictures. You see the incredible number of animals at gut piles within an hour of the gut pile being left from the trail cam. And this, if you can watch, is an eagle suffering from lead toxicity. If I can get it running. Okay, our audio is not working, but this gasping is a very characteristic breathing pattern in a bird that cannot be treated for lead toxicity. It's gasping, neurological twitching and seizures to the eye and the head. This is a bird that's being held, unanesthetized, and just sitting there twitching away. This is a bird standing in the cage. You can see the neurological impairment. It's not normal for an eagle to put its head upside down and to lay over and just kind of collapse. And hopefully we have a healthy eagle to show what a healthy eagle looks like. Maybe.
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, we had the pictures up there from the trail cams, but I certainly had the experience of, you know, right after you shoot a deer, like they show up very quickly.
Absolutely.
And now nobody wants to hear me talk either, so.
I can also tell you that it's been documented that they not only show up after shoot, but they respond to the gunfire. So they know that's a free food source showing up. And this is Max. Max is a 22-year-old female bald eagle. And yes, she's majestic. Max is a lead survivor. She was treated for lead toxicity when she came into the Raptor Center. That is not why she's non-releasable. She's with us because she has a permanent wing injury. But she is a lead survivor, as I noted. And she and Mike are here to answer your questions.
Any questions, members?
Hmm? Yeah.
Dr. Morrison, Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am not a hunter. I have many family members who are, and I'm new here, but can you help me understand what the advantage of using lead shot is?
Lead shot's traditionally used, and so it's something that people are very comfortable with. They know it. It's been the traditional ammunition. The copper-based or all-copper non-lead ammunition is very effective with kill. It does not fragment the way lead does, and so you don't get the same problem of a toxic substance spread through the carcass.
Dr. Ponder, you mentioned that the Max is a survivor from lead, so what had to be done to bring her back to health?
So if an eagle or any other animal or human has lead toxicity, There are injections called chelation, where you inject a product that then binds to the lead and helps the body to excrete it. If the lead level is low enough and or the neurological damage is not to the point of permanency, then getting rid of the lead out of the body, they will recover. We've done studies with MRIs to show that eventually the brain is basically Swiss cheese.
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about, so you said that 85 to 90% of the eagles that you see have lead exposure. So I'm guessing that because of the neurological deficits, sometimes it's injuries caused because of their behavior based on the neurological deficits. You know, I can imagine, you know, they might be more likely to be hit by a car or something like that.
Dr. Ponder.
Representative Beckerfin, thank you. That's a really good question. It's one that we are currently looking at and studying. It is quite possible, so no amount of lead is natural in a biological system in an animal. We do not know the impacts of the subclinical levels and whether or not they predispose the animals to trauma. It's quite possible.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To our testifier, we know the impacts on the adult eagles, and I know with some fowl, they take what they gather and share it with the young. How does that, does that same thing happen with the what I would call the chickadees of the eagle, is when you've got the young egrets. Thank you. Eaglets. For the eaglets. So for the eaglets, how does that impact? Are they fed from that same kind of like gut bile through regurgitation, or how does the lead play out in that kind of situation?
Dr. Ponder.
Thank you. Eagles do not feed regurgitation the way that other birds do, but they do bring food to the nest, obviously. We have had eaglets that have had measured lead in the blood from nestlings. That's not, you know, they're not well studied there, but that has been documented, and we can only assume that there's neurological impairment. We do not have that information.
Any other questions? Dr. Ponder, anything else?
No, thank you. I was hoping Max would give us a mouthful of noise, but she's being quiet.
Thank you. We have Meg Gamage Tucker, CEO of the National Eagle Center. Welcome.
My name is Meg Gamage, Dr. Meg Gamage Tucker. I'm the new incoming CEO of the National Eagle Center in Wabasha. I was asked to come and talk a little bit about the impact on eagles of lead poisoning today. And I would just like to refer to Dr. Ponder and her great expertise and the expertise of the Raptor Center, and how the majority of our birds that we have received at the National Eagle Center have come from the Minnesota Raptor Center. And the pictures that you saw showing the eagles that have been impacted, and you met Max, who has recovered from eagle lead poisoning. We have an eagle today that I was going to consider bringing to share with you. She is not a recovering eagle from lead poisoning, but her muse mate, Columbia, is a recovering eagle who was screaming very loudly when I left the center today because she had laid an egg and she didn't know what to do with it. All she could do was look at this egg and try to figure out what her job was to do as an adult eagle. Columbia was named after the Columbia Space Shuttle. She is an absolutely beautiful animal who looks much like Max does, but she is completely neurologically impaired. Any extensive sound or motion scares her. Any birds flying outside the muse scare her. And she has 30 more years of expected life to live in that kind of state. It is a, you've seen the pictures of the twitching, you've seen the pictures of the interactions. That's not a population issue. That is a survival and humanitarian issue. At the National Eagle Center, currently we take care of birds that have been impaired, that have been damaged through accidents, through feeding off gut piles and have lead poisoning, through other issues. And we use these birds as our ambassadors to share the stories. We have people from all walks of life, hunters, fishermen, people that believe in the eagle as a spiritual icon, people that are veterans who come into the center to look at eagles and talk about their strength, their ceremony, their survival, and the stories that have brought them to this state today. The eagle was almost eradicated, as you all are well aware. And what we're hoping is that through the messaging that we are trying to provide at the center, that the community will again come together about an important issue and not allow the animal that is our national symbol to be harmed again. The community made their survival possible, and we hope that you will come back with us and support through the efforts of this legislation, the education, ongoing education about lead and the issues that surround it, as well as the importance of working with all parts of our community. Hunters and anglers are our best friends. They are the best conservationists that we know. And we want to work with all of those communities to make sure that this incredible species is protected. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. Thomas Casey, Friends of Minnesota Scientific and Natural Areas. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tom Casey, and I serve on the board of the Friends of Minnesota Scientific and Natural Areas. We're a nonprofit, tax-exempt corporation organized to protect and enhance Minnesota's scientific and natural areas, the crown jewels of Minnesota's state land base. SNAs protect some of Minnesota's rarest and most sensitive plant and animal species and the ecosystems upon which they depend. We support the three bills that are in front of you, so I'm only going to come up here once and just support all three bills. They're pertaining to lead, and we request that also the Minnesota legislature adopt comprehensive legislation to require the phasing out of lead ammunition and lead fishing tackle. So we're already on record in favor of requiring non-toxic ammunition and non-toxic fishing tackle. In September of last year, 2019, we filed a legal petition with the DNR requesting the DNR to adopt rules prohibiting the use of lead ammunition and lead fishing tackle, not just on SNAs, but we recognize, of course, that this is a statewide problem, so this would be throughout the state of Minnesota. Among the organizations supporting our petition to prohibit lead ammunition and lead fishing tackle are the Isaac Walton League, Minnesota Division, the Friends of Mississippi River, Hawk Ridge Bird Observatory, the Minnesota Ornithologists Union, and the Raptor Resource Project. Also in your packet is a copy of an article that was published by the Minneapolis Star Tribune editorial board supporting our petition to ban lead ammunition, lead fishing tackle. Again, that's in your packet today. As required by law, the DNR replied within the 60-day time period, and I quote, our proposal is best addressed by the legislature. These three bills that are in front of you today are part of the process to appropriately address, that is what the DNR said, appropriately address the lead issue by legally phasing out lead ammunition and lead fishing tackle. We support Representative Fisher's bill. It's not in front of you today, but it's House File 3825 that phases out lead fishing tackle. We also recommend that you add legislation to phase out lead ammunition. We want to be on record, though, to say that we recognize and support the Minnesota Constitutional Amendment, which states that hunting and fishing shall be forever preserved and shall be managed by law and regulation for the public good. These laws that we're asking for, requiring non-toxic ammunition and non-toxic fishing tackle, do not deprive a person of their constitutional right to hunt and fish, nor their Second Amendment right to bear arms. So in summary, please adopt the three bills pertaining to lead today as an important educational tool as part of a comprehensive legislation to rid Minnesota of toxic lead and toxic lead ammunition and toxic fishing tackle. Thank you very much, and I'm available for questions.
Are there any questions for Mr. Casey? Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Mr. Casey, for your testimony. What are the obstacles for rules or laws which would establish non-toxic hunting and fishing equipment?
I'm not aware of any obstacles.
Do you think that?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hendow.
Mr. Chair. Just asked a question of my colleague saying that I thought that lead buckshot was illegal. I'm misinformed, I guess. But what is standing in the way to eliminate lead-based buckshot? Is there anything?
Mr. Casey.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I am not aware of anything that prevents the legislature from adopting a statewide ban on lead ammunition and lead fishing tackle.
Thank you.
Representative Hendow. Are there any other questions for Mr. Casey?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your listening. Appreciate it.
Next up, Carol Henderson. I was going to introduce you as the Carol Henderson.
I'm super honored to be sitting at the same table with Carol Henderson.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate the chance to be back here again today and to share my perspective on House File 2946. And once again, I have to mention that I've been working with research and surveys protection of bald eagles since 1977. And we're still losing bald eagles. The causes of death in 1977 immediately went away when we worked on laws preventing the use of lead ammunition for waterfowl hunting. But once that was taken care of, we realized that the much bigger issue was lead in deer hunting ammunition. And that issue still continues. And I have hunted since I was 10. I've deer hunted since the 1960s. So I am kind of a hybrid here. I'm a conservation avid birder. I'm heading for Columbia this Friday. Next week, go see more birds in Columbia, but I'm also an avid conservationist right here in Minnesota. And I want to just express my appreciation for the work that the Raptor Center does in creating all of this awareness of the problem, but we need to bridge that conversational gap between hunters and conservationists and bird lovers to say that really we're still all in the same boat in terms of trying to create a cleaner environment for all wildlife. And if you look at those 30 eagles approximately that get turned in dead or dying at the Raptor Center each year, if you look back 30 years, take that times 30, you could say we've lost about 900 eagles just since that time. And that's only the actual body count. Those are the ones, not the ones that die out in the woods. This could easily be 2,000 eagles that are dying. Now, how many really need to die before we're willing to admit that this is a problem that now can be resolved? Now, when steel first got adapted for waterfowl use, it was not the highest quality that people appreciated. But within the rifle, shotgun, muzzleloader industry, the precision tooling that's involved has made steel, copper, even tin for shotgun shells, shotgun slugs, really accurate. Last year, Barnes Bullets advertised that they had copper bullets that were effective out to 700 yards for big game. I wouldn't shoot anything at 700 yards, but technically they could do it. They also have produced shotgun slugs in 20 gauge that are accurate to 1 inch of accuracy at 100 yards. So they've really come a long way. And Federal Cartridge, for example, has 62 different varieties of calibers, gauges, and bullet weights for their ammunition. And several years ago, Pat Redding and I were talking about how we need a good person who can try this out as an example of a good deer hunter. So we went and we visited with Bud Grant. I said, Bud, have you ever used copper? No. Oh, would you like to try some? Oh, okay. So, well, it was after the deer season, I called Bud. And I said, how did you do? And you know, this is a guy who shot probably over 120 to 140 deer in his life. He knows his deer hunting. He says, well, I think that box is going to last a long time. I used two or three shells to just make sure my gun was sighted in. Drove out to Montana, shot a mule deer buck with one shot, dropped. Came back to Alexandria, went hunting, dropped a whitetail buck with one shot. Used five shells for that season. and the box has 20. So he says it's going to last more years. You know, you can say, so a box might cost, say, $48. Now you're down to $12 a year for ammo. It's not that expensive. And now sometimes, as people talk about the mortality from bald eagles, some hunters take offense at this information, thinking it's a slam on hunting. Well, it's not a criticism of hunting. And it's not a threat to gun ownership, and it's not a threat to the Second Amendment. This is just a different type of hunting. It's like switching from a recurve bow to a compound bow. And one of the things that I think is important to discuss here is that the excuse you sometimes hear that, well, it's not causing the population to decline to the point the eagles are becoming endangered, so it doesn't matter. Well, to most Minnesotans, it does matter. It matters a lot. And if you look closely, there's nothing in the Second Amendment, in the Bill of Rights, saying it's acceptable for deer hunters to poison eagles. In fact, the Bald and Golden Eagle Act of 1940, a federal law, says it's illegal to poison eagles, golden or bald, even a single eagle. That's on the record. That's the federal law. Julie already mentioned the human health dimensions. There's also the big effort for R3, recruitment of more hunters. And the target audiences for those include people like millennials, locavores, women, and youths. But if they knew they were being encouraged to use lead, they would be repulsed by the idea. They would not use lead, and they wouldn't want to eat it, and they wouldn't want to share it with their family. And then just one of the last things I'll mention here as a considerable issue is that hunters have long espoused the importance of observing high-quality hunter ethics. One of those ethics is humane taking of your game animal. And one of the ethics rules is, as a responsible hunter, you owe it to the animal to use a weapon powerful enough to cleanly kill whatever species you're pursuing. You must do everything in your power to ensure that you quickly kill your target with as little pain and suffering as possible. The absolute last thing an ethical hunter wants to do is to wound an animal and have it suffer unnecessarily. Now, think about it. When hunters or some hunting organizations who advocate lead are confronted with the facts regarding lead poisoning and bald eagles, they ignore the data and express no sense of responsibility for the tragic and lingering deaths of those eagles. This is a double standard that's just plainly not acceptable, and it is a black eye on the face of those hunters who are advocating lead. And so what this bill will do will facilitate presentation of objective information about non-toxic ammunition choices and the relative advantages of those ammo choices. The Raptor Center will develop and deliver hunter-friendly, comprehensive educational programs of shooting workshops, events, and materials in collaboration with the DNR, also with the Wildlife Society of Minnesota, and other conservation partners. And they will present hunting in a positive manner that explains how non-toxic ammo perpetuates conservation concepts and our legacy of deer hunting traditions without causing collateral damage from lead poisoning to our national bird, the bald eagle. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on the bill, for or against? Mr. Ness. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lance Ness. I'm the president of Anglers for Habitat, and we have a short statement. Anglers for Habitat recognizes that lead fishing tackle and lead shot are toxic to waterfowl and other fowl. The extent of the mortality is made difficult because the mortality occurs in the wild, in forests, swamps, lakes, and fields. Added to this are carrion predators who quickly dispose of the remains. To some, it isn't the severity of the numbers of waterfowl lost, but the magnitude of the task and the cost to remove lead from tackle and shot. Yet the issue is contentious within the environmental, conservation, and angling groups. Banning lead tackle and lead shot means re-educating anglers and hunters to practices that date back for generations. To accomplish a re-education effort, we will need tackle manufacturers, shot manufacturers, retailers, lake associations, conservation organizations, sports enthusiasts, anglers, and government agencies to act together. Even in states that have enacted bans on lead tackle, is available in retail markets and freely sold via the internet. Overall, states with bans are trying to limit the ingestible small sinkers and jigs, some more than others. Anglers for Habitat encompasses a gradual transition to other metals, such as tungsten, bismuth, zinc, tin, copper, and steel, which are already commonly used by anglers and hunters. Bismuth, tin sinkers, and split-shot tungsten jigs for both summer and winter fishing could replace their lead equivalents, even without an outright ban. Anglers for Habitat would support better efforts to keep discarded, damaged, and unwanted lead tackle out of our lakes and landfills. We recommend practices that make disposal easier and convenient. We support the bill.
Any questions for Mr. Ness? Is there anyone else who would like to testify, either for or against the bill? Any closing comments?
Thank you so much for considering the bill. I hope that you can support it.
I renew my motion that House File 2946 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. We need to adopt the minutes because we didn't have a I think Representative Purcell, did you?
I peruse the minutes and move to adopt.
Representative Purcell moves adoption of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. Representative Becker Finn, House File 3063.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So a lot of the testimony we've heard already obviously applies to both of my bills as well as Representative Acom's bill. House File 3063 specifically deals with non-toxic ammunition vouchers, and the idea being, you know, again, encouraging education and voluntary change. As folks may remember, my first year here, one of the first bills that I introduced was a complete ban on lead ammunition for deer hunting. And since that time, I've had a lot of conversations with different folks. I've done honestly research into kind of how things happened in California, where lead ammunition is completely banned, as well as some success that states like Arizona have had in kind of using more of a carrot model than a stick model. And as a hunter and a conservationist, I think if there are ways that we can get people working together and on the same page where people don't feel like they need to pick a side, I think that we can be more effective. And so my goal really with this bill is to say that I heard you, and this is a step we can take even before, you know, or if everyone voluntarily made the change, we wouldn't have to ban it because it wouldn't be used. And so this bill specifically would set aside funds for the DNR to provide non-toxic ammunition to people. So again, that kind of that R3 population that Mr. Henderson talked about are new hunters. So I was recently certified as a firearm safety and hunter education instructor volunteer through the DNR. And so this would be something that once you complete that course, you would be provided either with a discount or at no cost some ammunition that is non-toxic, so you can see for yourself that it's just as effective, if not more effective, than the lead alternatives. And I don't have any additional testifiers in addition to the folks that already testified, but welcome a discussion if folks want to talk more about it.
Any questions for Representative Becker Finn? Do the prior testifiers want to testify? Is there anybody else who would like to testify? DNR, does DNR have any thoughts on the bill? Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have talked with the DNR. They're here if we have specific questions, but they're don't have any problems with the idea as long as we're giving them the funds to do so.
Again, anyone else want to testify? Representative Becker Finn, any closing comments?
Nope. I think I've said what needed to be said, and I think Max the Eagle was here for that testimony.
as well. So I would move that House File 3063 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Representative Becker Finn renews her motion that House File 3063 be laid over for possible inclusion. The bill is laid over. Representative Becker Finn, House File 3220.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment to 3220, so I would move House File 3220 in front of us and then move the A1 amendment.
Representative Becker Finn moves that House File 3220 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill and is moving the A1 amendment. Any discussion on the A1 amendment? Any discussion? Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And essentially after this bill, House File 3220 was drafted before I knew for sure whether the federal settlement funds were going to come through to deal with lead tackle. And in discussions with both PCA and DNR, this moves the authority to PCA from DNR since they already have started related programs.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The A1 amendment is adopted to the bill. Is there anyone who would like to testify to the bill as amended? Anyone who'd like to testify? Representative Becker Finn, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to clarify what this specific bill is, so the first bill is dealing with ammunition. This one deals with tackle and would... Essentially, it's a little bit more than what is possible with the settlement funds that were an issue earlier this session coming from the Deepwater Horizon settlement to help loons and other waterfowl and birds who are impacted by lead poisoning. You know, when we have settlements, we're constrained by the terms of the settlement, and so this would give some extra leverage to do things more effectively. And I also wanted to make sure that tackle manufacturers and retailers were part of the discussion, and this would require that. And hope to have your support.
Representative Becker Finn renews her motion in House File 3220 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Representative Becker Finn, appears that Representative Cantrell is not here. Would you please present his bill so we could?
I would be happy to do that if someone can grab me a copy of the bill.
And I believe there are testifiers.
All right, Mr. Chair, I would move House File 3543, and if you could remind me where this bill is going.
It is being laid over for possible inclusion.
That would be my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Becker Finn moves that House File 3543 be laid over for possible inclusion. And I believe we have Ms. Loomis here to describe the bill.
Yes, thank you, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. This is a bill that is not new money. It's just taking money that the watershed district has already been allocated to manage dredge material and allowing us to use this to complete a project or fill a gap in a project that has the district did with somebody else wants to talk here with the City of Chaska, the DNR, and with a grant from the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Due to a number of miscommunications between the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Watershed District and staff changes at the City of Shakopee and at the Watershed District and at Bowser, we didn't get our grant request for the final payment of the grant in on time. And we had an obligation to the City of Chaska as the Watershed District, and we have a hole in our budget because of the non-payment of this grant. We're asking to reallocate money that was used to manage dredge material, and this, there is a little bit of a nexus here in that this project we did is a ravine stabilization that was contributing large amounts of sediment into Seminary Fen on an annual basis, and we're just asking that this money that we had gotten to manage dredge material allow the district to reallocate it to this dread the Seminary Fen project. The reason that we've got the funding available to do this is that we had planned a capital improvement project at our dredge placement site in the city of Savage, and we had originally estimated that the project was going to cost about $1.5 million to complete, and we just recently completed the bidding process for it, and the bid came in significantly lower. It's less than $500,000 to do our project on the dredge site, so we have the money available in money that's already been granted to the district from the state, and we're just asking that we redesignate the allocation.
Thank you. If Assistant Director Bogalke from the Board of Water and Soil Resources would testify their opinion on the bill. Thank you, Ms. Loomis. Director Bogalke.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kevin Bogalke. I'm the Assistant Director for Regional Operations with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We think that this is a doable replacement of funds. It's a simple grant amendment to the existing appropriation to that's directly to the Watershed District, and would not cause any difficulties in terms of the grants administration and processing for either Bowser or the Watershed District.
Any questions? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In case I missed it here, the testifier spoke about dredging, but the bill talks about a fen. What did I miss?
Mr. Bogalke? Ms. Loomis?
Well, I can touch on it, and perhaps Ms. Loomis would be better served, but the seminary fen, is, I have some familiarity with the area. It's connected with Assumption Creek, which is a designated trout stream. Seminary Fen is a calcareous stream, or a calcareous fen, which is a unique wetland type in the state of Minnesota, but also in particular the Minnesota River Valley. It is in the Minnesota River floodplain, so it does have a connection. The project intent was to keep sediment out of the fen and the trout stream, which eventually gets to the Minnesota River. So the use of the funds would essentially be a preventative act, where the appropriation that Ms. Loomis referred to with the appropriations for dredge management and storage and dredge material placement, this project actually results in a reduction and a preventing sediment from reaching the river.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Green.
And you're with the MPCA. Don't fens fall under the authority of the DNR?
Well, we have within the Board of Water and Soil Resources, which I work, we have oversee the Wetland Conservation Act. There is wetland regulation that is administered and overseen by the Department of Natural Resources as well.
Okay. Was there kind of, excuse me, Mr. Chair, thank you. Was there any breakdown between the agencies and the city and the watershed on this issue?
I would say excuse me, Mr. Chair and members, it's more in terms of the grant administration, grant processing, and the grants that we allocated and provided to the Watershed District had a appropriation time limit, and that appropriation expired, which prevented them from submitting their reporting for the to receive the full amount of the grant that they did receive.
Okay, Mr. Chair, one more question then. If this all went through the watershed, was there any cost sharing with the agencies like the DNR, seeing as how if they're supposed to be in charge of these, why weren't they paying for some of the protections or even some of the dredging to keep this clean?
Sure, I'd maybe ask Ms. Loomis to address that, the specifics on their grant administration and cost sharing.
Ms. Loomis.
Yes, sir. Representative Green, this was a project that was a cost share with the DNR and the City of Chaska and the Lower Minnesota River Watershed District, and the grant from the Clean Water Fund through Bowser.
Representative Green.
So then you didn't get the grant in or something like that, and that's why you don't have the money to finish this, but was the other money from the agencies and the other areas account
yes.
put in?
Yes.
And so was that work accomplished already or
yes.
part of it? Okay, so this is just to finish up the whole project. Will this be enough then?
Yes.
Ms. Loomis?
This okay. will.
Any other questions? Is there anyone who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Representative Becker Finn.
I would renew my motion to move House File 3543 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Bill is laid over. And we are adjourned.